Okay, so now we're continuing again with the Harabayit, and we are going to talk about one of the halachas pertaining to when one goes up to Harabayit. We spoke about, I think we did fairly thoroughly, about which place you can go, which place you can't go. So now we're moving into the areas that you're allowed to walk there, or the maslul, the path that you choose to walk on. But now there come restrictive halachas about even though you can walk there, how you could walk there. So let's go back a little bit to the Rambam, just to like a little bit to put everything in perspective. So the Rambam says, mitzvah say liyira min hamigdash. It's a mitzvah deraisa to show fear for the migdash. Shenema migdashi ti ra'u, that you shall show fear to the base hamigdash. And now the Rambam goes on to the next halacha, and the Rambam says, v'eizohi yirasa. And how is this yira expressed? So the Rambam says as follows: Shelo yikoneis lahar habayit b'matlo. You should not walk up to Harabayit with your stick, with your cane. Now here, for simplicity's sake, it means in olden times it was customary for dignitaries to walk around with a cane. It was a very fancy piece of work. And for simplicity's sake, that's what he's referring to here, regarding a person who needs a crutch. That's a different story. Maybe we'll come back to that, but not today. But for simplicity's sake, it means that a person would walk around with this type of cane. Oh, v'minel shabaraglov. Oh, with shoes that are on your feet. Okay, so here's what we want to try to emphasize or look into a little bit today. The prohibition, if you go up to Harabayis, the prohibition for wearing shoes on Harabayis. Not allowed to wear shoes on Harabayis. So first we want to know why. That's number one. Number two, how does it come under the halacha? How to relate to halacha of Yira? And number three, we talk about shoes. What type of shoes are Asa? Regarding what type of shoes that are Asa, I would say many say they draw the analogy to Yom Kippur. Shoes that are prohibited to wear on Yom Kippur means shoes with leather. Those shoes one should not wear on the Harabayit. Those shoes one should not wear on the Harabayit. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky brings it down in a sefer. Remember, he wrote a sefer on one of his Sfarim, wrote on the base of Bechir, called Der Chachma. He printed one volume so far. And he brings down that the shoes that are prohibited on Yom Kippur, one should not wear that on the Harabayit. Yes, question.
Unless I'm incorrect in thinking this, but isn't the idea of not wearing leather shoes on Yom Kippur completely separate in Yon than not wearing shoes because of like Amat Kodesh?
Correct.
So how do they draw the...
Right, okay, just about taking that point. Yeah, so some asked a question that Yom Kippur, what does Yom Kippur got to do with the Harabayis? And we have actually in this week's Sedra, it says, Akash Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, as he approaches the snare, and Akash Baruch Hu says, Shal no lecha me'al raglecha. Take off your shoes from your feet. Because the land that you're standing on is Kodesh. So you have to take off your shoes. Now, obviously, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know anything about Yom Kippur. It was before Matan Torah. So he wasn't talking about it. He didn't make the analogy to Yom Kippur. And really, if you look at it a little bit further, Yom Kippur is really the issue of Yom Kippur is inoy, to feel the difficulty, the affliction of Yom Kippur, right? You don't eat, you fast, you can't anoint yourself, and you want to show you're removed from comforts. You want to show you're removed from comforts, and therefore you don't wear shoes. And actually, even though shoes are, many hold, it's not necessarily leather, although the minhag came leather. But from the Rambam, it's certainly clear that it's that you should be able to feel the ground. That when you walk, you should feel the ground, that you shouldn't be comfortable. It's the comfort of the shoe, that one is permitted to wear on Yom Kippur. That one is not permitted to wear Yom Kippur. But you have to wear shoes that don't have that comfort, that you actually feel you're walking on the ground. Those are the ones that are permitted on Yom Kippur. I understand, if I remember correctly, that the Rav was makbid on that, not to wear those shoes that have a good cushioning on the bottom. But certainly it's the Rambam Shita. So, but again, what does that have to do? What does that have to do with the Harabaya? So therefore, many are critical that came the defining factor of which shoes you can wear, which shoes you cannot wear. But let's go back and let's try to understand. No matter what shoe you're prohibiting, and keep in mind, by the way, the Levium and the Kohanim, I mean, they did barefoot. They walked around barefoot on the Arabayat. But now the question is, let's go back and retract a little bit. Why is it that on the Arabayat you can't wear shoes? What's the prohibition? What is it based on? And how does it? And the Rambam seems to be saying very clearly, this comes under Yira. Yira is awe for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to show awe. Now also a question was raised amongst the Achronim that. What about in the shul? Remember, shul has, our shul is, we call it a mikdash ma'at. Our shul is like a little model after the base of mikdash. Well, our shul at least wants us to realize that we are connected to the base of mikdash. The harabayit, as we spoke about in the past, is the place where comes the source that HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts our tefillah, that Ki Beisi, we say that Ki Beisi, that means my house, that's the house that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, my house, Ki Beisi, Beis Tefillah HaAmim, my house is a Beis Tefillah, that's the shul par excellence, my house is El Chol HaAmim, and therefore we have to relate to that Beis Tefillah, Beis Tefillah par excellence, that we have to relate to the higher bias. That's the Beis Tefillah, Chol Amim, for everybody, for the whole world, not only for the Jews, but for the whole world. So, and that's why the shul has a din of like a mikdash mat. This is like a little model of a mikdash, and we spoke about in the past, should be facing the higher bias, and that's our connection. We always try to face the higher bias, because that connects us to the concept of our relation to a Kodesh Baruch Hu vis-a-vis tefillah. Remember, carbon, we spoke about, I believe we mentioned that in the past, carbon, always, with carbon you have tefillah with it. You always had the mamados, that there was tefillah with it. Amravino, the carbon, again, par excellence, was the Akedah. If you look, he was mespala there, the Targum says. Right there was mespala. So tefillah and carbon are tied together. We have Tefillah, so with a model after Kabanos, right? Shachos, Mincha, Ma'ariv, Musaf. Well, Ma'ariv is, of course, a model after the what's left over, but okay, but Shachos, Mincha, Musaf, these are all carbon Todah, so on and so forth. All this is, a person wants to give Nadava, all this is model after Abaya. So Tefillah and carbon are closely tied together. That shows our bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our bond with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I think we also mentioned in the past, that one is avoda shebelev. The Rambam says tefillah is avoda shebelev. That's our avoda belev. Karban is avoda beidayim. That's our avoda we do with our hands. We offer a karban. That's our physical avoda. One's belev. And we connect them both together on the higher bias. And that's why we're taught the higher bias. So the shul is like a mikdash ma'at, that we shouldn't think that tefillah is separate from the higher bias. It's always tied with the higher bias. So now, many raise the question. Chaim Kanievsky brings it down in a sefer here, that there was a minig, there was a minig to v'yesh machmirin. He says here, and those who are machmir gam be'beis hakneses. There are those people that were machmir in the beis hakneses shloim kodesh b'manolim, that they shouldn't wear shoes. And he says v'tzarch in. We need a little bit to look into it. I'm sorry, I got something else. Okay, but anyway, it says there was a minig to not to wear shuls in a shul. And it quotes it based on Yerushalmi, whatever it is. Because we don't practice that minig. We don't practice that minig. And the question is, why not? I mean, after all, if taking off your shoes shows covered in the higher bias, we should show covered in the shul. Actually, the Rav, Zechat Tzatlav Racha, in one of his famous shirim, the Rav used to give a Yortzeit shir once a year in honor of his father. And that was a very special shir. It went on for like between 3 to 4 hours. And it was at nighttime, and people came from all sides. It was really, just being there was an experience you have. If you're familiar with YU, the Lampert Auditorium was packed. And they had those days a new thing. They had a microphone in the Beis Medrash, and they had 2,000 people there, and they go on for 3-4 hours. And he's pick up a topic, and like I say, elaborate on the topic. And one of the topics, as a side point, comes into this point over here. Why is it that in the higher bias, why is it on the higher bias, shoes are asa, and then in a shul, it's muta? Yeah, by the way, the Aruch HaShulchan is very much against that minig. The Aruch HaShulchan is very much against that minig, and the Aruch HaShulchan says, taking off your shoes in the shul came from the Yishmaelim. That was their practice, and he held it's asa to do. He said, that was a minig tos. People, we don't have that minig anymore, but I guess there were communities which did have it. But he says that that people had that minig. It came from the Yishmaelim, and it's you shouldn't follow that minig. It has nothing to do with us. We don't do that. We don't have that practice, and he's very much against it. But the question still comes about. So why not? If it's what's good for our bias, why shouldn't it be good for shul? Remember, many things are very similar. You can't talk to Varam Batalim in our bias, can't talk to Varam Batalim in a shul. So many similarities we do have. But this is one that we do not have. And the question is why not? Yeah. And the question is also, like we said, what does it show? Why is it so important? Why is it so important to take off your shoes? Why is the Kodesh Baruch Hu told? Tell Moshe Ben Hashan Alecha, take off your shoes. Why is it so important? Well, what's the terrible thing to walk with shoes? So let's hold the rough a minute. We'll come back to it. But let's see first we solve this problem. How does shoes show covered or yira to higher bias? How does it work? How do taking off shoes show covered or yira? How does that work? Okay, so I mean, you could use maybe a social type of approach. There are places, not too much today, but in Asian countries, in Japan, China, India. You come to the house, supposed to take off your shoes. And that idea was, you don't walk with your dirty shoes into someone's house. You know, guys in that house, especially in the old days, you know, you had muddy streets, you don't come in. So came a method of covet that, you know, you leave your dirt outside, you come with your dirty shoes, you don't put them in, you leave them outside, take off your shoes and you walk around. Either they give you slippers or you walk around, I don't know if you had socks or barefoot, but the idea was you show covet to your host and to the people you're staying by. You don't bring your dirt into their house. So, I mean, one approach to explain it is that it's like a was accepted method of covet, that you take off your shoes to show covet, that now you don't want to get the shoes you wore in the street. That's what you wear shoes. You don't bring your street dirt into the house. So it's covet. You show you're dressing nice. You're respecting. You don't want to get it dirty. Yes, go ahead.
And for those who don't look like that, would they still say that if your shoes are dafka, like very muddy, dirty shoes, in that situation would it make more sense? Not as a matter of just kavod, like as an outside deal, but it's just like this would be directly not like a direct lack of kavod to be wearing something dirty in the Beit Knesset. Would even the other side agree to that?
I don't follow you.
The side says that you do wear shoes usually in a Beit Knesset.
Right.
If your shoes are dafka, very muddy at the moment.
Right.
Would they agree that you should take off your shoes because if you don't, that is showing like direct disrespect to the Beit Knesset?
Sure, absolutely, of course.
Okay.
That goes down to
the overall idea they don't agree.
Right. That's right. That's a good point. It goes without telling you, without saying that you know you don't come in with shoes, you don't come muddy shoes to the Beit Knesset. Your shoes are most shoes. Well, we in Israel don't have too much of a problem because we relatively have a small winter and it's not too much of a problem. But you know, in America we have at least in the eastern coast or northeastern coast, you know, especially with the snow and slush, you know, and you see people coming in. Track up the whole shul. I mean, I was a rav 10, you know, for 10 years in Muncie, and my father was a rav his whole life. And you see, people just don't care. They come and track up, mud up the shul. Yeah, that's certainly, everyone agrees that's certainly disrespectful. That's for sure. That's absolutely for sure. You should bang it off, clean it off, come in, you know. So it is a Beit Knesset. You don't want to make it dirty. That's for sure. But the question is, as a standard practice, does it show covet taking off? And that's one approach to it. Though I'm not too much in favor of that approach for one simple reason, because the higher bias where most people walk or the walk that we take today is outside. I mean, okay, you still don't want to make money. Okay, all right, okay. All right, that's one approach. Okay, let's try another approach. Also that would not fit in well with the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, it's hard to. I mean, it wouldn't fit in well. Now, Kosher Baal tells Moshe to take off your shoes, because they're muddy. Now, it doesn't fit into that story. So that would be probably, I guess, one of the major problems with that theory. That Kosher Baal says, "No, shall na lechem al reglecha." I mean, where is it coming from? Is out in the desert. So that would not fit in well with that with understanding the story with Moshe Baal. Okay, so let's try another approach. Another approach is an interesting approach. And it's based on actually the concept in Megillas Rus. You see at the end of Megillas Rus, there's a kinyan being made on karka, and it says that let's get the pasuk right here quickly. It says at the end when they're about to form the kinyan, it tells them take off the shoe and make a kinyan with your shoe. Which came to be later known as a form of Kinyan Suda. It says, V'zos lifnim b'Yisrael. And this was the practice in the early days of Israel. Ala gul v'atumur l'kayim kol davar. That you want to make a Kinyan. Sholaf ish na'alo. You took off your shoe. V'nasam l'reo. And you gave it to your friend. Zos hatudah b'Yisrael. This was a tudah. This is a confirmation. Confirmation that the transaction was done. And that eventually turned into our Kinyan Suda. I'm sure you saw Kinyan Suda. Bet Hashem, you guys will get married at the Ksuba. The Rav will tell you, hold on to my handkerchief or my hat or something. We'll give you something. You pick it up and make a Kinyan. And many Kinyanim are made through that aspect. But one of my Talmidim told me, someone wrote a very nice parish. I can't remember his name. Can't really slip my mind now. And he wanted to say that was he was cone of the field. He was cone of the field. So that Kenyan that he was then cone of the field. So he wanted to say that the shoe was a symbol of Kenyan of Karka. Why? Because when you own property, you have the right to walk wherever you want. It's your property. You have the right to walk wherever you want. If I have a field, you can't walk into my field, even if there's no fence there. You have to ask me for shus. You can't walk through my field. You have to have a shus. So the owner could walk in his field wherever he wants. So the king was, I took off my shoe and I gave you the shoe. That means I'm sort of like giving you the key. I was going to give you the key. Here, take my shoe. That's symbolic that now you can walk wherever you want. It's your field. Here's your field. Here's the key. So the key, the practice was, they didn't have keys. They didn't have locks in those days, or not like we have today. So here's the shoe. Now you can walk wherever you want. So it was a key. It was a shoe that was yours. So using that thought, we come to the point that we want to show that this is not your property. This belongs to Kadosh Baruch Hu. This is Makom Kadosh. You have to realize this is Makom Kadosh. It's not yours. Take off your shoe. You don't really have the right to walk here unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you permission, and you have to follow his laws and his rules. So you're coming in as a guest, so to say. So you're not Malabias. You're coming in as a guest. So it's to remind you that where you're standing, saying Makom Kadosh is not yours. Forget it. You're not the owner. It's not your property. You're a guest here. And I would add maybe instead of making a third answer, but maybe two answers combined, let's hold this, look at the third answer, and then I'll come back, because I think these two answers work well, very well together. By Kedusha, wherever we have Kedusha, you have to have Avdallah. You can't have Kedusha to Avdallah. Yontif, Shabbos, you have Kedusha, right? You're Mavdil, correct? You're Mavdil. And if you don't say a Havdalah on something, let's say you take off Truma, right? You makdish this for Truma, right? You don't make Havdalah it, right? But right away it changes its nature. It's noticeable, it's different. Truma, right away, only coin can eat it. Has to be Tar, can't be Tomei, correct? Maaseh Sheni can only be in Yerushalayim. Right away the restrictions are apparent to separate it from everything else. Separate it from everything else. A Sefer Torah. By a person wants to buy a Sefer Torah, or wants to make a Sefer Torah, so he has to take the parchment, has to make L'shem Kedusha Sefer Torah. Right away it's different. Now you can't write, when you say L'shem Kedusha Sefer Torah, that parchment cannot be used to write a story, to write a song. That's Mukdash Sefer Torah. Tefillin. Once you makash the tefillin, that's it. You can't use it to store coins in there. It's Kodesh. So the nature of Kodesh is that we know ipso facto from the object itself, from the responsibility to that object, this is different. That's Kodesh. Now, right, we know there's two different things. You know, a Sefer Torah is not a scroll. Something different. Different thing. You know, tefillin is not a decoration or a box, so on and so forth. So either you'll, and Shabbos, we make Shabbos, Kras Yontif, Mavdil, both of them. So there always has to be some action that makes it evident that this is a different Chafta. It's not the same Chafta. Correct? The guy has a parchment, like I say. If you write anything on it, once you say the same Kedusha Sefer Torah, that parchment is different. Right away, it's evident. You cannot now write a song or story in that parchment. It can only be used to Sefer Torah. Only use Sefer Torah. So there has to be a method or vehicle in which the object comes apparent that it's Kodesh. And either it's, like I say, through words. Once you words, certainly Makadosh it. It could be the restrictions that you have on it. Truma, right? Maisros, all these are restrictions. Who could eat it? When you could eat it? Where you could eat it? And the Kedusha Basic and SS. Also, it's Kedusha Basic and SS. Once you Makadosh this place for a Basic and SS, yeah, right away, certain laws immediately fall in. And certainly, Kedusha's higher buyers. Certainly, Kedusha's higher buyers. So we are required, or the Torah requires us to be aware through different actions that you're in a place that's Kodesh. In a place that's Kodesh. And I think that both answers go along very well, and I'll come back to that soon again. But we see is that could be that's why that the shoes was a method of demonstrating that you're in a special place. It's not yours. You gotta take off your shoe. You're not the boss here. This house belongs to Kodesh Baruch Hu. This house belongs to Kodesh Baruch Hu. So now let's go back to the other problem, which was so why are we not so makbid on a shul take off our shoes. I mean, listen, if it shows kavod to our abayas, if it shows kavod to our abayas, listen, we have a mikdash ma'at. We have a mikdash ma'at. Yeah, so we should. Why not? Why not show kavod to shul as well too? By the way, you got to keep in mind that the kedusha of the shul, especially in Eretz Yisrael, has a different standard than the kedusha of a shul in Chutz La'aretz. I'm not going to go into the whole topic, but just you should be aware of it. In the shuls out of Eretz Yisrael, it's a whole big thing. Can you make it out tonight? In other words, you have a shul and you have it still. Usually in a smaller shul, do you want to make a kiddush there on Shabbos? Correct, want to make a meal there? And a lot of shuls, you know, they move out the tables and make a kiddush there. Yeah, it's not so simple doing it. But the heter is based on in Chutz La'aretz, you can make a shul al tanai. So when you designate a shul, usually the rav in charge will say he's making al tanai. That if you want to use this for a wedding hall, to make a wedding in it, or Kiddush and Shabbos, that we have permission to do it, and it works. But again, but you cannot make, and that won't help if you do real zilzal. You surely can't do zilzal. I remember once, many years ago, I was a rav in Muncie, and there's a shiva around there, and it was Purim, and they called me up there, you know, it was a relatively new yeshiva, and they didn't have a big place. They wanted to make a Purim shpil, you know, a little play. And we were in the neighborhood, and they called me up, and they asked me, could they use the shul after we finished? They're coming back late, you know, they were, you know, teenagers, 18, 19, you know, they stay up late, you know, and so on and so forth, and they made a play, and they're looking for a place to put it on, and could I do it in my shul, because we'll be finished? I said, I can't do it. I said, let's get, I don't see how to. Tonight doesn't work. You cannot do a zizzle to a shul. Cannot make people up there play. It's not the purpose of a shul. Can't be done that way. Tonight will work. If it's something covered, it has to be covered. You know, okay, you want to make a kiddush, suda Shabbos, whatever it is, suda, something like that, a wedding, okay. But not make a play and sing songs and that's zilzal. That doesn't work. But I want to say, in Israel, it's another machlokas, it's not so simple, whether tonight works. Some say it doesn't work in Eretz Israel tonight. Why? Of course, in Chutz La'aretz, it's on the understanding that everyone eventually comes to Eretz Israel. So you build a shul in Chutz La'aretz, you know it's only temporary until some future time that you come to Eretz Israel. But in Eretz Israel, you build a shul, there's no reason to move. There's our land. So again, and still, you see many shuls, they make a little kiddush in the morning or whatever it is. It's not so simple. Again, wherever you should ask the question, if it comes about, eating in a shul, like upstairs, I don't know if they do up here, but if they would, I certainly would, personally, I would refrain from eating there, but again, I'm sure that, I don't know what they do up here, I'm not even sure. But anyway, if the problem's more compounded here in Israel, yes, but yes, yes, go ahead.
I don't see, why should I guess the thing you're using a shul for, that's not, the thing, why should it matter whether it's a wedding or a play? Like, why does that matter?
Oh, because yeah, one is a zilzal. One is you're disgracing the shul. Using the shul for a ball game. That's a disgrace. You use a shul for a wedding. That's a respectful thing. You shul for a suda Shabbos. It's a respectful thing. But to use shul for bingo hall, and many shuls in America did it. Again, I'm not saying that. I'm sure they asked the question. You know, you could a lot of times you have to squeeze out a heter. You know, bingo supports the shul. The shul needs money, so it's covered. Okay, listen. All I'm saying is it requires a little bit. Don't take it so simply. You have to look into it. But many shuls will do that. And listen. I could see people giving out there too. Listen, that shul needs money, you know, it's covered the shul. I don't know. Sometimes the bingo halls, I don't know, it's covered. Okay, again, that's for the rough to decide. Okay, yes, go ahead.
Also, question on the wedding.
Huh?
What about, let's say, the bringing a glass in a wedding? Wouldn't that be disrespectful to the
bringing what to the wedding?
Breaking a glass.
No. It's a cover. It's a mitzvah. Zechel Chavon. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah. They don't throw the glass over the shul. It's a thing. They pick it right up.
It's a mitzvah to use something negative, so therefore...
It's what?
We do it dafka because it's negative and bad.
I know. Okay. Well, again, this is not the topic now, but the bottom line is it's mitzvah-oriented. It's mitzvah-oriented. I want to talk about it more, but that's not the topic now. But basically, a wedding is mitzvah-oriented. There is another problem with a wedding in a shul for Ashkenazim. Many Ashkenazim make a wedding in a shul because chukas ha'akum. It's another problem. It's a big problem. That's another problem. We're not going to get into either now. The problem is standing up for the bride. I mean, again, that's I think we spoke about it once or twice. That's chukas ha'akum. There's no place to stand up. No such thing. No such thing. I think I mentioned once before that I took Rav Moshe one time to a wedding. So I sat with him up front, and the kala walked in. Everyone stood up, and I was about to stand up, and I saw Rav Moshe didn't stand up. So I said to myself, I said, if he's not standing up, I'm not standing up. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't stand up, and I was only two people. I sat down, and then actually he left there after the chuppah. I didn't have a chance to ask him. Someone else took him home. But my understanding was that it's chukas ha'akum. That's true. It's chukas ha'akum. Stand up for the bride. And a wedding in the shul, the shuls weren't made for weddings. They were made for shul, made for davening. The wedding came from the church. The church to make their weddings in the church. That's a Christian idea. And all these marching down. I mean, again, I'm not getting into that topic now. With the flower girl and the butler boy and this, all that marching down. It's all from the Goyim. I just remember because I'm telling you a point here. Of course, once I was by my daughter in the U.S. of A. and I was sitting around in the morning, and she told me that now on one of those 400 stations that she had, it's called the wedding station. So and I said, I want to see it. You know, I put it on. It's unbelievable. It's just you march down. And they stand up for the bride. The music's marching down, and then you have the honor maids and the butler boys and I don't know. And this guy, it's clear. It's clear where they got it from. It's clear where that minute came from. That, you know, and that's a good way to kind of the dinner of chukas ha'akum if you want to. That's one way of doing it. But so there was a minute in Ashkenaz not to make a wedding in a shul. It was a very strong minhag throughout in Europe. Ashkenazim, they didn't make it in the shul because chukas ha'akum. But when it came to America, shuls needed money and they needed to say they make the ceremony in the shul. They did have a cameo, so I don't know. Listen, so every rav has to make their decision. Yeah, go ahead.
This issue has happened to me before, what you mentioned about not standing up for the bride. So if everybody else is doing it, it seems from your story, you would say that if everybody else is doing it, you still shouldn't, like, you shouldn't be...
Right, I saw a motion to it, that's right, correct.
So better to not do, if everybody else is practicing chukas ha'akum, better to be poorish than not.
Yeah, that's what I would say, absolutely. And by the way, the Sephardim, I have a cousin who's a Sephardi, and it was after that, once we went to a wedding together, sitting to each other, and the Sephardim never stood up. I said, you don't see anything? He said, Sephardim, listen, because the Sephardim, remember, the Sephardim weren't influenced by the church.
Yeah.
I said, strange, why is she standing for the kala? And he said, if my mother walked down, I'd stand up, okay, but not for the kala. Right? So that's right. Okay, anyway, so let's get back over here. So now the question is, yeah, so why do we make that distinction? That was the question the Rav asked. And the Rav gave a beautiful answer. And if you look very carefully at the Rambam, you see that the Rambam says Yiraso. What is the Yira? So there's two things the Rav pointed out. There's Kavod and there's Yira. The Hara Bias demands Yira. A Shul really demands Kavod. Kavod basic Mikdash. Kavod basic in essence. What's the difference? So Rav explained it like this. Rav explained it is that the difference between a shul and the Har HaBayis is the Har HaBayis is really the base kinesis of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kav Yachol. Because as the passage says, Ki Beisi, my house, Beis Tefillah. What's my house? That's where the Shekhinah is at. That's the house of the HaKadosh Baruch Hu. My house is Beis Tefillah HaMim. That's my house. That's the Torah refers to it as the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A shul is Mikdash Ma'at, but it's not the house of Kadosh Baruch Hu. In fact, there's a lacha, could you sell a shul? You have to have a Zayin Tuveir, you have to have a committee called the seven people responsible for the city, you built an Al Tanai, can you sell it? You have these problems have these problems all the time. Especially when I was growing up, neighbors used to change in 5 years. You know, especially an aunt and uncle, I'm sure, used to live in Baltimore. Like every 5 years, they had to move. The neighborhood went, but that, you know, that has stopped over the years. And the shivas built up, shuls, you know, and they moved out. The whole neighborhood changed, came a little bit more like a like the old Wild West. Robberies went up, and of course the Jews moved out, and they left with the shuls and the schools. Yeah, so they, you know, the whole question: how do you sell it? Can you sell it? Do you? Okay, they got their term. They sold it, whatever it is. You know, there are ways to do it. You sell it, whatever it is. They went to Rabbanan. Rabbanan said, listen, they're going to lose $1,000. They can't. The shul is going to be empty. There are some shuls. There's an old shul in particular, in the Lower East Side. A very big Talmud Chacham was the Rav there of Rashi. Of course, he passed away, man. And Rav Henkins, the Echatak of Rashi, he's a daven there. And of course, the neighborhood died down. But they was clear that shul stood there, I think still standing today, empty. Empty. They will not sell it. Well, no one's left to sell him. I don't know what the lawyers are in America anymore. But the shul was empty. They were mockbid not to sell it. And there's a shul around the corner from Teresh Elayim. Also, a very beautiful shul. And the president wanted the money. He didn't care. He sold it. And Moshe was very, very upset. But there's nothing he could do about it. I sold it to a Buddhist church. Moshe was very upset about it. That's real Avodah Zarah. Real Avodah Zarah. And you drive by there, you see this big Buddhist idol. And that was where Rabban Kotler's Leviah was. I mean, like, I go there, like, it just turns my heart over. You know, so again, but there are ways to do it. There's Zayin Tuvair, you know, you could sell to him an educational institution, and they could sell, and they could sell 30 and 40 and whatever it is. Okay, but it's called Zayin Tuvair. They're in charge of the shul. Right. But you can never sell Harabias. I forget. Can't be sold. And that's why it's still ours today. It cannot be sold. Was never sold and will never be sold. That's our land. David HaMelech bought it for Klal Yisrael, and that's based tefillah of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. We do not have the right on that Har HaBayis. We don't have that right. It's not ours. Right? But a shul is ours. Who owns the shul? You know, again, there's a committee, there's a board, there's a this, a that, election, whatever. But it's owned by humans, by the people in the community, whatever it is. Harabai, it's not owned by anybody, but it belongs to everybody. I mean, it belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I said, keep Basi, Basi Yilchol Amim. Ah, so the Rav said, when you go to Harabai, you have to have Yira, because you're entering the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to say. That's his house. When you go, so you go to Lahavdil, let's say you go into a dignitary's house, you know, you walk with respect, and you're in his house, you know, you're in his place, you're his guest, that's Yira. But a shul is our shul. It's sort of like, again, Kav Yahol, HaKadosh Baruch is coming to us, like welcome in Shabbos, welcome in HaKadosh Baruch, he's our guest. Like, you know, we have the Midrashim, we come home from shul, to Malachim, walk you to your house, see how the house is set up. Again, that we have to realize the importance of Kavod Shabbos, right? So Kadosh Baruch Hu is coming to us. So we're the Baal Bayis. Who's the Baal Bayis of this shul, of this building? The Baal Batam, the people here, the members, they own it. They can, you know, they have, okay, some restrictions because it's Kodesh, but okay, but they can want to make it higher, bigger, they want to make this section here, that, you know, it's theirs. They're the Baal Batam. So here, it's covered. Covet. So covet is if it's your house. If it's your house, everyone is a member of the shul. It's, yeah, you can walk in the house the way you want. You know, covet. Like I say, you can't be disrespectful. You know, you won't walk in the house with muddy shoes. You know, your mother will probably break a neck or something. If not, your father will do it. Look what you did to the carpet, right? Okay. But if they want, they can do it. It's their house. So the if is a lach of covet. So a shul halacha of kavod, even though sometimes the terms are interchangeable, but the essential mitzvah is kavod. Har Bayis is you're walking into the shul of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's yira. That's a different thing. That requires a different level of showing respect. And that level of showing respect, one way it's manifested, but not walking in your shoes. Could be the Svarah we show that shows it's not a house. I think it's a very good Svarah. That's the shoes would show that I have the right to walk there. You don't have the right to walk there. You're a guest. You have permission, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us permission, only under certain circumstances. Remember, you don't always have permission. Baal Keri spoke about, can't come in. Sorry, can't come in. Right, Anida, Zava, can't come in. Sorry, can't come in. That's it. So you show that we don't have bailus. It's not bailus over. We don't have bailus over that. So therefore, you know, or you want to show that you have to realize that you have to feel, you have to be aware. Now, remember, you don't wear shoes. We said you feel the ground. I usually go with socks. I don't believe me, you feel the ground. You feel the ground. Every step you take, you realize this is not my house. My house, I would wear something that would make me more comfortable. Here, I'm doing it to be aware. This is the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We are a guest. So on the Harabayas, we're the guest. And the base Knesset, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our guest. We invite him in. So that's why we have the idea, and that fits in very well with what the Aruch HaShulchan said. Aruch HaShulchan said that not to wear shoes in a shul, he said that came from the Arabs. That came from the Muslims. We don't have the idea, right? Of course we don't have the idea. Why not? It's your shul. We're the Baal HaBatim. We voted we want this type of floor, right? We don't vote on what type of floor we want in Harabayas. We are instructed what type of floor to build, what type of pavement you have to have. Here, we've owned it, so that doesn't fit in with the system, with our system. So Yoch Shulchan, I think, is 100% correct. That came from the Muslims. The Muslims take off their shoes. Okay, that's it. But Tzchuk HaZakam, why should we do that? Now, so we'll take up one more. Okay. Take up next time. I haven't got enough time. We'll stay up next time. The difference between, can you wear leather? So it seemed to be at this point that leather, it's not the question of leather. Right? Leather is Yom Kippur. That's Inui. Here, it's a question of COVID. So who cares? So what difference does it make if it's leather or what's fancy sneakers? You have expensive sneakers. So that we'll save for next time. Yeah, a question? You have a question? Sorry, no? Okay, we'll stop here.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay.